Eye on the Arctic, views from the north, I'm Elise Quinn. Now, a major Arctic conference was underway this week in Norway. Arctic Frontiers took place in the city of Tromsø and was attended by everyone from scientists to world leaders. Now, headlines generated out of the conference, they touched on everything from tumbling oil prices to Arctic cooperation. And they also generated numerous conversations and exchanges on social media. Now, to get an overview of this year's Arctic Frontiers and some of the main themes of the conference, we've turned to journalist Irene Quayle. Now, she covers environment and climate issues for Germany's Deutsche Welle, and she was at this year's conference, and her ice blog appears frequently on Eye in the Arctic, so many of our listeners and readers are already familiar with her work. And we've reached her today at the Deutsche Welle offices in Bonn, Germany. Irene Quayle, hello.
Hello there.
Now, you've been covering Arctic Frontiers for a number of years, and before we just get into some of the specifics, what stood out for you about this year's conference, either in terms of, the themes or what people were talking about?
Well, I think the first thing was the sheer amount of interest. It was absolutely huge this year. As some people said, it's virtually exploding. So we had a massive number of people there, also huge media interest. And I think one thing that was particularly interesting, or a little bit different even from previous years, was all the talk about climate. Because, of course, climate is always a very controversial thing in an economy whose wealth is based on the sale of fossil fuels. So from that point of view, having climate and energy as a topic was a little bit different. It meant that that had to be on the agenda. And the controversy and the debate was just so lively. It was quite amazing.
And, talking about energy and resources, when we were just looking at sort of the headlines and what people were talking about online, the drop in oil prices, it's changed a bit the discussion around Arctic resource extraction and sort of the long-term potential in the north. What can you tell us sort of about that discussion and how it was treated at the conference?
Well, I think that was certainly one of the key issues. I think that's also what attracted a lot of people, because people think that the Arctic oil rush or the gold rush could actually be slowing down. There are some people who say, no, it will continue, especially from the Russian industry, the oil industry in particular. But there are others, of course, especially the conservationists, but also some business people who say Arctic oil is quite simply not viable with oil prices as low as they are. So I think that was the interesting thing. There were still two very divided camps, representatives of Statoil and the other oil companies who were there. Also, Rosneft, the Russian oil state giant, were saying Arctic oil exploration is still going to continue regardless, and that they will not be put off by the low oil price, because it's rather a question of how things pan out over a longer period. But there were others there, including a very powerful businessman in Norway who was saying, no, we really have to think this. It doesn't make any sense. Then we had, from the NGOs, WWF, had two very powerful speakers there. One of them, Samantha Smith, who's responsible for global energy, renewable energies and so on. And she presented the conference with a vision of how actually Scandinavia and the whole of the North could become an example of sort of green growth up in the White Arctic by opting for wind and wave power instead of oil and gas. Of course, that doesn't convince the oil people, but I had the feeling that on the whole, there was much more of an awareness that we really have to think about what is going to happen after the oil era, and to reconsider whether it is really worth taking the risk of going into the pristine Arctic with oil prices so high. And another argument was that given that we have the big Paris climate talks coming up at the end of the year, there are people in the business sector as well as in the environmental lobby who are saying that ultimately, if countries are serious about climate change and put caps on emissions, then fossil fuel for the future is simply not going to be viable, that it would become a non-option.
Well, that's interesting. There's a lot to also look forward to in 2015 to say how this is going to play out in the long term.
Yes, indeed. And also, to my knowledge, it was the first time that an actual representative from the UN Climate Secretariat was on the platform talking to people about the need to find alternatives and reduce emissions. So I also had the chance to talk to the Norwegian premier who was there, actually presenting a new report on sustainable growth in the north. But the main pillar, one of the main drivers of that growth for her, is the gas industry. Now, of course, people see gas as a bridge technology and as being less harmful to the climate than oil, but it is still not climate neutral. It's certainly not low carbon fuel. So from that point of view, there is still this dichotomy. On the one hand, she was saying to me, yes, we want to be very active and help get an agreement in Paris, but at the same time, they also, just during the Arctic frontiers, allocated some new licenses to prospect in the Barents Sea region. So there's still a kind of a tension there, which I think, well, no one conference was able to solve, and which is going to continue to occupy us up until the Paris conference in November, and of course beyond. But it will be very interesting to see how all of these countries can combine, on the one hand, their interest in getting some kind of a world climate agreement, and at the same time, not damaging their economic interests insofar as they are based on fossil fuels.
And then also sort of a little along the same lines, when you and I have talked about these kinds of conferences before, the issue of representation and voices from the Arctic's indigenous peoples, you know, it often comes up. And, you know, from the portions of the conference that you were able to attend and sort of what you saw, do you have a sense that this is improving, whether in terms of development in the north or in terms of climate, that indigenous voices are having more of a more prominence?
No, I'm afraid actually I had the feeling that that was not the case. It would have been interesting to hear more indigenous voices. Of course, you always hear the politicians, if you like, paying lip service and saying, yes, we must involve the people up there. And of course, because climate was the theme, there was some talk of indigenous people being the ones who could stand to gain, but who could also lose most by this very rapid climate change up there in the Arctic. But on the whole, my feeling was that they were not particularly well represented, and I would have liked to hear a bit more.
And then just the last point, something that's come up a lot in 2014 was about tensions between Russia and the West over Ukraine and how that might or might not play out in the Arctic, you know, in general, or the Arctic Council specifically. You know, from what you were able to sort of see and hear at the conference, did you have the sense, were these issues broached in any way, or was it sort of left to the side?
No. This was certainly a big topic which was brought up in a lot of the debates. One thing is that the Russian representatives, there was one academic there, Professor Alexander Sergunin from St. Petersburg State University, and he talked about how the sanctions were affecting various projects which would normally involve the West and Russian, whether it be scientists or other researchers, and which were also affecting communities in the North. The other thing is, of course, that as far as Russian oil development is concerned, there are problems getting to Western technology. So the Norwegian Premier, Erna Solberg, told me too that she felt that Norway was suffering because they have had to literally put their cooperation with Russia to some extent on ice, which includes the providing of Arctic exploration technology. But at the same time, everyone was very keen to stress that they would like to see these political tensions kept out of the Arctic, and that they rely very strongly on the Arctic Council to make sure that the tensions don't get out of hand and that the cooperation within that particular body continues as before.
Well, again, along with that and the other issues, there's a lot to keep our eyes on in 2015. Irene Quayle, thank you so much for joining us today.
A pleasure.